This episode of Shaun of the South is brought to you by Case Knives, a tradition of my family dating back to my granddaddy, the fisherman, the woodcarver, and the Southern Baptist, who always said the best cure for idle hands is to build something. So keep your hands sharp with a Case Knife.
Hey, you're listening to Shaun of the South, and that good music you hear behind me is Randy Cook and the Commonwealth Bluegrass Band.
I see the blue sea. I hear the roaring tide. My silver ship waits for me. One day I'll take my ride. I'll meet the one that put me here to live my life on earth. The God that gave me joy and love. The God that gave me birth. The God that gave me birth. I'll sail God's great main, or to the golden shore, where I shall beach, craft for good, and sail away no more. I'll meet the one that put me here to live my life on earth. The God that gave me joy and love. The God that gave me birth. That gave me birth.
A mansion there
waits for me.
My time to rest will come. Not for the bad or sin I did.
But for the good I've done. I'll dwell therein forevermore, far from the earth and sod, and be there with my Maker, the great and living God, the great and living God, and be there with my Maker, the great and living God, the great and living God.
Read a little bit of our mail today. Lisa Martin from Oxford, Mississippi says, "Dear Shaun, I read your posts every single day and I share them often with my family and my friends. They touch me in so many ways. However, if you really eat like it sounds like you eat when you talk about food, you eat the most unhealthy food I've ever heard of. I know being on the road so much makes it hard to find healthy alternatives, but please eat a salad for me today, not smothered in ranch. And eat a vegetable if you can, not cooked to death in hog jowls. It would make me feel so much better. Dear Lisa, I promise I will eat a salad today just for you. Billy Dockman, Grove, Oklahoma. Hey, Shaun, my wife and I are full-time RVers, and we listened to 20 of your shows last night while driving from Florida up to North Carolina. And our GPS quit working because our phone was stuck playing your show. So we ended up in Charleston, South Carolina instead. We like it here so much, we're going to stay for a few more nights, and I guess we have you to blame for it. Danica Headland, Marfa, Texas. My cousin is my best friend and my worst influence. She taught me how to get in trouble when I was a kid. She's always been that way. We were on her porch one night, we're adults now, and she was chewing this gum like crazy, and she said, "It's awesome gum, you're going to love it." She gave me a piece, and let me tell you, it was awesome. And I started to feel really good, better than I'd felt in a long time, actually. I was relaxed, but able to think clearly. I started chewing this gum all the time from a handful she gave me. I even chewed it when I went to pick up the kids from school. It was the best few days of my life. Then, when I asked her what the name of the gum was so I could buy me some more, she said, "It's nicotine gum." Anyway, long story short, Shaun, now I'm trying to quit smoking, so pray for me. I haven't had a piece of gum in a full week. Dear Danica, we will definitely say a prayer for you. Larry Gunn, Shreveport, Louisiana. My wife is a jewel. She cooks for me something special almost 3 or 4 times per week. A recipe either she's working on or a recipe she's read from online or from a cooking TV show, and it's always delicious. So I tried my hand at making her something to eat. It was called gnocchi. I can't even pronounce that word. It seemed pretty easy from what I saw on TV. Basically, it's bread and pasta sauce. The only problem is I didn't follow the recipe exactly right, so for supper, we basically had two slices of Wonder Bread with tomato sauce on it. She ate every bite and she told me how wonderful it was, even though I know she was lying. I'm so grateful for her. Ryan and Aaron, LaMonica, Hayes, Kansas. We are Kansans through and through, and we listen to your show religiously. My grandmother was the one who started this whole thing. She couldn't figure out how to get your podcast pulled up on her phone, so she asked for help, and we plugged it into her smart TV, and we all just listened together. She lives on a big farm, and we kind of found ourselves looking at the windows at the big fields my grandpa used to keep under plow. Anyway, just saying thanks for the good stuff, man. Lori Martin, Camp Verde, Arizona. My son and I went for a long horse ride yesterday through the desert, and we talked about things we hadn't talked about in years. I was a single mother, you see, and I raised him to be an independent kid to take care of himself. But I still remember that little boy who used to ride horses with me and didn't want to tell me about the girls in middle school who made him blush. He's an engineer right now, and he's traveling back to Virginia while I write this. I will miss him so much now that he's gone again. I'll miss him, but his new job and his new family is in Virginia, and he's got to do what a father's got to do. That's how life goes. Come to Arizona sometime. I will show you some fun. Willa Merrick, Sonoma, Georgia. Hi, Sean. My mom's about to be 90 years old. She still drives and lives on her own. She was driving on her way home from church, and she picked up a stray dog who we all nicknamed Chance. When my mother came to visit us last night for dinner, Chance came with her. He can take care of himself and load himself up in her car, and he even gets his own food bowl. He holds it in his mouth when he's hungry. It's something else to see. My husband put a dog door in her back door, and she doesn't have to do anything for him except get him some food. Anyway, I just wanted to say I hope I'm like my mom when I get to be her age. Dear Willa, I hope I'm like your mom when I get to be 50. Rob Manson, Hansville, Alabama. I relocated into Alabama after being gone for 40 years. I lived up north and I was born to be a city boy. At least that's what I thought. I fell in love with New York and Boston. I never missed Alabama a day in my life until I started getting older. Then I came back home, and I realized that I was so mistaken about my fellow Alabamans. The people are so good to me here. There is kindness everywhere, even in gas stations, cashiers at the grocery store, stockers, people you meet on the street, and you don't get that kind of sugar up north. So I just want to say, glad to be back home. I'm a Southerner turned Yankee, turned Southerner again. Dear Rob Manson, welcome home. Bobby Mae Daniels, Jonesboro, Tennessee. Hey, Sean, my husband is a dork. He watched YouTube videos about how to sharpen your own lawnmower blades. He jacked up his little John Deere in the shed and took the blades off and sharpened them with an angle grinder. He was mowing his lawn yesterday, and he got halfway through and wondered why the grass wasn't getting cut. Well, come to find out, he never put the lawnmower blades back on the mower. And it reminded me of something you would write about. His name is Rory. If you read about this, make sure you tell him I said he's a dork on the air. Dear Rory, your wife Bobby May has called you a dork. Ernie Poehler, Decatur, Alabama. Hi, Sean. My wife was doing a Bible study over at a friend's house on Friday nights, and she's been doing this for just about as long as I can remember. And she always comes home in the best mood, which is why I encourage her to go. I figured it was the good Lord who kept her feeling that way. But a few Fridays ago, my son and his friends were riding bikes in the neighborhood, and they spied on the women's Bible study, and they peeked through the windows of the house where it's held, and they saw all these women on sofas drinking wine, watching a movie, and some were in the dining room even playing cards. My son said, "Dad, I didn't see a Bible in the whole house." Well, Sean, it's no wonder my wife has been feeling so good on Friday nights. Dadgum, I'm thinking of starting a men's Bible study myself. Dear Ernie Poehler, I will attend that Bible study. Allison Croft, Florida, Missouri. My husband of 42 years bought me flowers yesterday, and it made me feel like a teenage girl again. I am far from a teenage girl, Sean. I'm stretched out. I'm an old woman. We raised 3 kids together, and all are doing well for themselves, and now we have 9 grandkids. I am a blessed woman, but I still sometimes feel like a lonely old woman when he's gone at work. It's amazing what a few flowers can do. I want to tell you, and anybody who listens to your show, that you should buy more flowers for your loved ones. Put it on your calendar if you have to. Once a month, twice a month, just do it. Buy those flowers. I love you, Jay. Thank you for my flowers. Dear Allison, thank you for writing me today, and I appreciate your thoughts on flowers. I hope everybody listening to this, including myself, will go out and purchase a few flowers for somebody they love. And that's letters from our listeners. Let's have another tune from Randy Cook and Commonwealth. Randy Cook.
Found them Sunday morning in a Bible by her bed. Place between the pages full of scriptures Mama read. With each picture I did find a verse that she had underlined, and from the grave my mama spoke to me. With these pictures Mama left behind, these old pictures of love and better time. As I hold the memories, I can't hold back the tears that fall like rain. These old pictures. I slowly turned the pages as I read these lines. Blessed is the precious gift of love throughout all time. In my hand I could see a picture of Mama holding me. I heard her say, I love you one last time. With these pictures Mama left behind, old pictures of love and better time. As I hold the memories, I can't hold back the tears that fall like rain on these old pictures that fall like rain on these old pictures.
In this part of the world, the highest form of flattery that a man can be given is to be called a mess. I hope and I pray that one day at my funeral, they will call me a mess. They will say, that's Sean Dietrich, oh, he was a mess. But then again, I won't be there, so if they don't call me a mess, I'll just have to pretend that they do. My friend Oney Michaels, his father, John, was a mess. Or as my father called it, he was a bird in the world. A bird in this world. That is a step higher than being a mess. That borderlines on being a little bit eccentric. You don't want to be called anything worse than a bird in this world, because the names which succeed these titles
were borderlining on being not right or touched. Such titles might be A Wreck, That Sean Dietrich Is a Wreck, or A Painful Sight. That's even worse. If you've been called a painful sight, chances are you've been married more than four times. John Michaels, a friend owned his father. He was a mess. He was a mess. He was a good man. He was an eccentric man. He had a shed out back, which he had painted the inside of that shed with multicolored paints, swirling designs and starbursts and pictures of mythical characters on the walls. It was a strange little shed, but he did paint incessantly. He never sold anything, but he did paint all the time. He had this strange way of making sandwiches. I loved to watch him make a sandwich. His sandwiches were 7 foot tall, and they had too many ingredients on them. And there's a right and wrong way to make a sandwich, if you ask me. You can't put too many things between two slices of bread without everything losing its identity. Ingredients are meant to be tasted one by one. If you put too many things between white slices of runny bread, you are going to not know what you're eating. You won't be able to taste what you have on there. John Michaels would put strange things on his sandwich. Sometimes he wouldn't even have any lunch meat at all. There would be peanut butter, there would be mayonnaise, there would be slices of squash, uncooked, Brussels sprouts, which had been minced, and sometimes chocolate syrup. He was an odd man. He was a bird in this world. He was a mess. And one day, my friend Oni and I were watching John make his sandwich, and he was just to the spot where he was pouring barbecue sauce just over the peanut butter. And we heard a knock at the door. John Michaels walked to the front door. He looked through the keyhole, the eye hole, and he saw something. It was two Jehovah's Witnesses. Now, in this part of the world, Jehovah's Witnesses, they usually wear short sleeve shirts, white, with dark-colored slacks that are pressed sharp enough to slice tomatoes. Their hair is slicked to their head. It is a haircut which hails from the 1930s and 40s. It's very high and tight. And they wear a dark necktie. And they usually carry a big, thick book underneath their arm. I assume it must be Gone with the Wind. But these two Jehovah's Witnesses were not wearing neckties and trousers. They were wearing miniskirts. And they had long hair, and they were built a little bit differently than the average Jehovah's Witness that found its way to John's porch. And immediately John stepped back, and he considered which course of action he could take. John Michaels had a reputation for dealing with Jehovah's Witnesses in colorful ways. My friend Oni had told me about it. Long ago, a pair of Jehovah's Witnesses came to John's porch, and his first mode of action was to tell his sons to disrobe completely. And so Oni and John and Oni's brother, they all took off their clothes until they were standing butt naked in front of the door. And John opened the front door, and there were two young men standing there with their neckties squeezed around their necks and their trousers pressed. And they looked at the three butt-naked people standing in the doorway, and their mouths dropped open. And they dropped their flyer from the Watchtower Society, and they ran away. Today was a different day for John Michaels. Looking through that eye hole, he decided he would entertain these Jehovah's Witnesses. It was his spiritual duty to entertain these young women in miniskirts. And he opened the door, and Oni and I were completely flabbergasted, just like John was, because we had never seen Jehovah's Witnesses in miniskirts. And there's something about it that just amplifies the entire message. Previously, we had been terrified of the Jehovah's Witnesses. Whenever we'd seen them, our preferred
policy was to hide behind the largest piece of furniture and wait for the knocking to subside, and then you could see through the crack in your door. The little flyer would be wedged through, and that was the Watchtower Society flyer, and those things always made their way into the trash. You never entertained the Jehovah's Witnesses, not because you don't like them or you don't respect them. Some of them are nice people. You don't entertain them because they are better at conversation than you are, and they can leg lock you with their words into answering the way they needed to answer and prove to you that you are a sinner bound for hell, and if you don't attend their meeting, you will be in the devil's den. And so you never entertained them, but we were entertaining them. These two young women walked into John John's living room. These two young women sat down, and they were college age, and they were very, very nice looking girls. And Oni and I were completely quiet because boys like us don't know what to say in front of girls. Matter of fact, if you want to see a boy get real quiet, just put a nice-looking girl in the room. I've heard it said before that a beautiful girl will reduce all men of all ages into a teenage boy. That is true. Owen and I had nothing to say to these beautiful young girls. We were just looking at them. John John sat down across from them, and they went through their spiel. And John John listened, and he nodded. And normally he would have done something erratic to send them away, but he could not bring himself to do such. And so he just listened. And it was interesting to watch how an older man behaves much like a teenage boy around nice-looking girls. John John was a mess, like I said, long ago. He used to have a stuttering problem. He used to say two or three words, and it would take him the same effort as it would take you or I to read through War and Peace. He had a stuttering problem from his very early ages. And Oni's aunts, John John's sisters, they were his protectors. They always helped him in sticky situations. They were good at finishing his sentences for him, and they could be his guardians. In a few situations in his life, they had caused bruised lips and black eyes and bloody noses to some of John John's accusers. And children can be rough, they can be mean, and John John's sisters were his protectors. Stuttering is a thing that makes you feel like you are beneath people. That's what John John used to say. It's a feeling of inferiority, because in a room full of people who can all use their voice, you are reduced into nothingness because you can't get more than a few words out without stopping and tripping over your own syllables. God bless him. He was a good man. He was a good man. And he listened to these two young ladies talk, and he started to stutter. We had never heard him stutter before. His stuttering had gone away ever since he'd met Oni's mother. She gave him the kind of confidence he needed not to stutter. I guess that's because she wasn't a young woman in a miniskirt. Stuttering is what men do around young women in miniskirts, whether or not they have a stuttering problem or not. It's the natural state of a man who is nervous. And so John John could not tell these women that he was not interested in becoming a member of the Watchtower Society because of his stuttering. And Oni looked at me, and he knew he must do something to save his father from ultimate peril, because John John's wife would not have it, would not have this, him being a member of the Watchtower Society. She was a tried and true Presbyterian, and Presbyterians are the frozen chosen. And they do not even believe Methodists are going to heaven, let alone those in the Watchtower Society. Those in the Watchtower Society are bound most certainly for hell itself. But John John could not get the words out, and so he just found himself nodding in agreement and trying very hard not to look at the bare knees of these two younger women. Oh, the Watchtower Society did good that day by sending out two blonde and brunette girls to recruit for their church. And at the end of the speech these two girls had made, John opened his mouth, and he really meant to say, "Thank you for explaining all this to me, but I have no interest," something along those lines. But what came out of his mouth was, "Where do I sign up to be a JW? And so the two young girls reached into a small pack they were carrying, and they brought out a contract, and they set it on the coffee table. And Oni and I looked at each other, and we tried to speak, but we stuttered too. Oh, these two girls had reduced every man in that room into nothing but a little itty bitty June bug. And so John reached into his pocket, and he brought out an ink pen, and he signed that contract. And while he was signing that contract, Oni's mother walked through the door, and she saw John signing a piece of paper, and she saw two nice-looking girls sitting in the living room. And she said, "What are you doing?" And he looked at her, and he said, "I'm just becoming a Jehovah's Witness today." And she said, "What?" He said, yes, I've decided that I don't want to be a Presbyterian anymore. I'm becoming a Jehovah's Witness. And Oni and little Sean here, they're becoming Jehovah's Witnesses too. We're all going to be Jehovah's Witnesses." And the two girls, their faces beamed because they had just scored three separate souls for eternity. And Oni's mother, she set a bag of groceries down, and she shooed these girls out of her house, and she tore up a contract which John had signed, and she threw it out into the flower bed, and she said, "I don't want you ever coming back to my house ever again." She looked at John, and she said, "What in the world were you thinking letting them two in here? I told you, the Bible says not to even entertain such people." John said, "Well, I just didn't feel right getting butt naked." Well, he made a good point. It would have been awful indecent. They would have called him a lot worse words than being a mess or a burden in this world. And Oni's mother was so upset. She was so upset that she got into her car and she drove away. She left, and we spent that entire evening with John. We watched him eat his big, tall sandwich. Watched him eat that thing. John said to us, I will never forget it. He said, "You do things in this life, on impulse, and the consequences they find you after you've made your choices." He says, "You think you're going to have this opportunity in life to choose your own path, and you're supposed to think about things before you do them, but that's not the way a human being is. A human being is just flesh and blood, and so it's not worth blaming yourself for things that you've done right or wrong." And Owen and I listened to him speak, and he spoke in a way that was just country enough to be eloquent, country enough to be brilliant. And then he walked out to his little shed, and he got his little paint set, and he dipped this brush into multicolored paints, and we watched him work on his mural. And he painted these circular shapes. He painted these starbursts and these figurines of men riding horses and women who had sunlight coming out of their belly. It was a strange, strange little shed. Well, that was a long time ago. Only he's a grown man now with two kids of his own, one of which is in high school. And only his father, John, is a lot older. He's got white hair, and in some spots has no hair at all. And he has the same sort of proclivity towards sandwiches, which make no logical sense. Oni was telling me the other day that his father was making a sandwich made of sardines, peanut butter, and mayonnaise. I have never heard of a sandwich which could gag a goat more than that, but Oni gets a kick out of this now. I talked to Oni on Sunday. I saw him at the church with his mother sitting beside him. She's still a Presbyterian, but she accompanies him to the Methodist church sometimes. I asked about his father. I asked where he was that Sunday. He said, "Well, my father likes to celebrate the Sabbath on Saturdays now." But today he's out wandering the streets. I said, wandering the streets? And I was thinking perhaps John had fallen into senility or dementia. And Oni said, no, it's nothing like that. Oni said, my father just enjoys making house calls ever since he became a Jehovah's Witness.
Thanks for listening to Sean of the South. I've been your host today, Sean Dietrich, and it has been a true pleasure. I hope you join us next week. That music here behind me right now is Randy Cook and his Commonwealth Bluegrass Band. Randy Cook, Malcolm Pulley, Mike Bailiff, Joe Kearns, and Wally Hughes. These guys have been a lot of places and done a lot of big things with their music. You owe it to yourself to check them out on iTunes or on their site, pulleytunes.com, pulleytunes.com. To find anything more about what I do, you can visit seanofthesouth.com. And while you're there, I hope you drop me a line about your birthdays, weddings, graduations, baptisms, and bar mitzvahs. I'd love to hear from my friends and see what you're up to. And speaking of friends, spread a little sunshine every day. Spread a little sunshine every day. Help someone along life's way. Spread a little sunshine every day. Adios.